Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Biden sides with Israel on the cause of the Gaza hospital blast.
Based on the information we've seen to date, it appears the result of an errant rocket fired by a terrorist group in Gaza.
A South African minister's phone call with Hamas sparks anger. A call is made for African ICC member states to support an ICC investigation in Palestine. Malawi relocates female emails to their female-only prisons. The Speaker of Liberia's House of Representatives loses his seat in the October 10 election. Sierra Leone's opposition agrees to participate in government following a boycott.
Firstly, that the president would make a national address on dialogue, unity, equal vision, and peace. And secondly, that the APC will end their non-participation in governance.
And Chad's defense minister resigns over Paul Porter's sex tapes. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. President Joe Biden was in Tel Aviv on Wednesday showing support for U.S. ally Israel following the October 7th attack by militant group Hamas that has escalated to an all-out war. Biden appeared to side with Israel, who denied responsibility for a massive explosion at the Gaza hospital that killed hundreds, ignited protests across the region, and scuttled Biden's summit with regional leaders. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadikaswara has this report.
This is what remains of the parking lot of the Ahli Arab Hospital in Gaza City, where a massive blast on Tuesday killed hundreds of people. Arriving in Tel Aviv Wednesday to show support for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, President Joe Biden said he was deeply saddened and outraged by the hospital explosion.
Based on the information we've seen to date, it appears the result of an errant rocket fired by a terrorist group in Gaza.
Biden said Israel has agreed that humanitarian assistance can begin to move from Egypt to Gaza and announced $100 million U.S. aid for Palestinians. He vowed to provide Israel what it needs to defend itself, but urged restraint in its retaliation.
You live by the rule of law. When conflicts flare, you live by the law of wars.
Netanyahu thanked Biden for his support. His government has pounded Gaza with airstrikes, killing 3,000 people, and ordered 2 million Gazans to evacuate ahead of an expected ground invasion in response to the militant group Hamas' brazen incursion on October 7th, which killed 1,400 people.
Hamas is responsible and should be held accountable for all civilian casualties.
Hamas blamed the hospital blast on an Israeli airstrike, while Israel said it was an errant rocket from the militant group Islamic Jihad. That group also denied responsibility. The hospital was considered a haven for Gazans fleeing Israeli attacks.
I don't know. A missile fell on us. We were on the floor. Everything got destroyed. We were destroyed.
The explosion and Israeli retaliation to Hamas have ignited massive protests in various cities, including in Lebanon, Jordan, Iran, Iraq, Tunisia, and Turkey. Demonstrators laid the blame on Israel. In Tel Aviv, Biden met with Israeli survivors of the October 7th Hamas attack. He had been scheduled to head next to Amman to meet leaders of Jordan, Egypt, and the Palestinian Authority. But the summit and the Jordan leg of the trip were scrapped following the blast. Patsy Wadikaswara, VOA News.
South Africa's foreign minister has been criticized for holding a phone call with the leader of Hamas just 10 days after the Palestinian militant group launched a deadly attack on Israel. Kate Butler reports that while the South African government has long expressed solidarity with the Palestinian people, a South African Jewish organization says the phone call indicates the minister supports Hamas.
Naledi Pandor, South Africa's Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, said in a statement that she held a call with Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh at his request to discuss getting humanitarian aid into Palestine. The Department of International Relations and Cooperation, or DIRCO, said that contrary to false reports, the minister did not express support for Hamas's attack on Israel on October 7th, that saw 1,400 people killed and almost 200 Israelis taken hostage. Rather, in keeping with her government's position, the department said she reiterated South Africa's solidarity and support for the Palestinian people and expressed sadness and regret for the loss of innocent lives on both sides. But Karen Milner, the chairperson of South Africa's Jewish Board of Deputies, said the call showed the minister had taken a side.
The South African Jewish Board of Deputies and the South African Jewish community is horrified at the fact that Naledi Pandor, the Minister of Foreign Affairs for South Africa, had a call with Hamas soon after the atrocious and horrific attack by Hamas on Israel.
She said Pandor's actions suggested Pandor supports Hamas. Earlier this week, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa issued his condolences to the people of Israel, but also pledged solidarity with the Palestinians, saying they were waging a just struggle. He said South Africa supports a two-state solution and has offered South Africa's help with mediation. South Africa's governing party, the African National Congress, has often drawn what it says are parallels between black South Africans' struggle against the racist white apartheid regime and the situation in the Middle East. Pandor has previously called for Israel to be designated an apartheid state. Bob Wakesa, a senior lecturer at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, said while usually the government deals with the Palestinian Authority, it was clear the government had also taken a position in support of Hamas.
I think on the diplomatic front, it is strange that Dirko would take a call from Hamas, given that it's not a formal organization. In any case, it has been declared or labeled or classified as a terrorist group.
Since Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu declared war and ordered civilians to move to the south of Gaza, more than 3,000 Palestinians have been killed in Israeli airstrikes. On Tuesday, almost 500 people were killed in a blast at a hospital, with each side accusing the other of responsibility for the explosion. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Southern African Litigation Center, the SALC, is calling on African ICC member states to support an ICC investigation in Palestine. SALC is a regional non-governmental organization based in Johannesburg, South Africa. Its mandate is to promote human rights and protect the rule of law in the Southern African region. For more on the call for ICC involvement in Palestine, VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached Dr. Atela Kisla, the International Justice Cluster lead at the Southern African Litigation Center.
We call on all African ICC member states is to support the ICC proceedings in the Palestine situation and support them with technical support, political support, and also in support of in terms of funding so that the court can do its work. Yeah, that's what we call for.
How far has the response been, those you have contacted? Because some states have had criticism for ICC, accusing it of double standards.
The response we have received so far, we haven't received any direct response. Today, the ANC chairperson, the ANC is the ruling party here in South Africa, the chairperson called on the government and the international community to call on institutions like the International Criminal Court to support their work and also call on them to so that they can conduct the proceedings with the chairperson said with the required speed.
Do they have a united stand? Because for them to be impactful to the ICC, they ought to have one voice.
So we believe that all the African ICC member states can come together on this because they all committed themselves to the idea of fighting impunity. This is the chance to underline these ideals of fighting impunity for international crimes and to prevent the Palestine situation of becoming a textbook example of double standards in international criminal justice. So I think this is also a chance for the African ICC member states to come together and show unity and support of the court's work and the proceedings at the court so that the perpetrators of crimes committed can be held accountable.
Some time back, the ICC prosecutor initiated investigations into the Palestinian situation. How far did it go?
So far, we haven't seen much progress since the proceedings. The opening of the investigations has been announced in 2021. So we hope that due to the current reports and the pictures that we all see around the world, that the ICC will conduct its investigations impartially and independently, as long as they are falling under the jurisdiction of the court.
Dr. Atela Kisla is the International Justice Cluster Lead at the Southern African Litigation Center. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Johannesburg. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday. Today is Thursday, October 19. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The latest provisional results in Liberia's October 10 presidential elections saw no significant change from Tuesday. President George Weah maintains a very slim lead with 43.48% of total vote and former Vice President Joseph Boakai with 43.44%. This makes it more likely that the country will go to a runoff presidential election in November. However, perhaps the biggest surprise came from the legislative results, where the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Beaufort Chambers, was defeated by Anthony Williams. Williams tells me that he changed his strategy and moved closer to the people of his district in Maryland County and began educating them about the government and how the government works.
When I lost my job through the intervention of Speaker Buffer Steamers from the National Fisheries and Aquaculture Authority, I thought that it was important that I come back to my people back in the district to be able to familiarize myself with them and be part of the community. And then I started to do my own community engagement, town engagement, all of the work that I was doing. I was investing into community development, rural rehabilitation, community rules, doing some work, some drinking water for our people. So as we go gradually, I will also explain to our people about the workings of the government and their rights and when they vote, what's supposed to come out of their voting. But all of those things that were happening in the national legislature, I was informing them on a daily basis that we have a speaker in the House who is making almost $2,094,702 U.S. every month in the national budget. If you check on page 7, you will see the money there. And he doesn't come back. People are still using hammer in the desert. They told people, me and hammer, they can put you in the bed sheet and they tie a rope to the other edge and they'll put you inside. They take you from some of the town just to pay for medical treatment. No ambulance in the district.
Anthony, let me ask you, you are a very young man and you have just defeated the Speaker of the House of Representatives. What are you going to do now as a member of the House of Representatives? What are your plans?
The first thing I want to put in here is to be able to have some reconciliation with our people, bring them back together, because you know there were too many conflicts in this election. The first thing to do before you can be successful as a lawmaker or as a leader, you need to bring the people together to have a reconciliation wherein those who went against you, you forgive them. So we need to have the reconciliation first so that we can have the kind of homogeneous development. So the second thing that we tend to do for our people is health. The healthcare situation in Plibo is very, very much embarrassing. If you look at the Plibo Health Center, there's no ambulance in the district. People are used on the motorbike to take patients from one place to another. Pregnant women are delivering in the street. So we also look forward to making sure that we address the healthcare condition of the district. From there, then we move on to water and sanitation, and then we start to do a few rules into the community so that ambulance can be able to go into the various places in the community.
Did the former speaker call to congratulate you?
No. He has not called me to congratulate me. As a matter of fact, today he left the district. He flew to Mozzarella County with another complaint because the magistrate here in Maryland County threw the case over that he raised against the National Election Commission presiding officer in Old Solokan about some other activities that went on there. But the magistrate and the hearing officer in Harper said the information he raised, it was not substantial. There was no evidence on the basis of that. They threw the case outside and he got irritated. And he got on the flight today. He went to Mozzarella County to go and raise another issue with the National Election Commission, magistrate, or the people. So as we speak, he has not called me, but I've received tons of calls from government officials, tons of calls from elected officials. They have congratulated me for him. He has not congratulated me. But I'm not surprised because this is a behavior. He doesn't congratulate people.
Anthony, congratulations for your election. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you, James. Thank you. And I look forward to speaking with you anytime as I move to Monrovia next week.
Anthony Williams is a Liberia's newly elected member of the Liberian House of Representatives. He was speaking with us from Plibo, Maryland County. Sierra Leone's main opposition All People's Congress, the APC party, has agreed to end its boycott of participation in government functions since the June 24 election. The APC had rejected the results and refused to participate in any level of governance because it says the government tampered with the results to hand itself the majority. Joining us with the details from Freetown is reporter Calvin Lewitt.
It is an agreement with eight articles, and in these eight articles, the resolutions there was that, firstly, that the president would make a national address on dialogue, unity, equal vision, and peace, and secondly, that the APC will end their non-participation in governance. They also agreed that they would set up a committee on electoral systems and management bodies, which would review the electoral system structures and processes. And they also agreed that this committee would develop its terms of reference and it would be effective for a period of 6 months. Importantly, they said the parties have agreed that they would release any persons arrested, detained, and or imprisoned for alleged elections and civil protest. This was a sticking point. And secondly, the discontinuation of any politically motivated court cases against the APC and other parties. Also, something which I understand was a sticking point was that on the assumption of their elective governance positions, all elected APC officials, members of parliament, mayors, chairpersons, and councillors will have the issue regarding their entitlements, which is their backlog pay, addressed accordingly by the appropriate institutions.
Calvin, the APC had stayed out of government functions because of disagreement with the results of the election, saying that the government cheated in the counting of the ballot. So how was that resolved?
Well, when we listened to Dr. Samuel Akamah, the APC leader, in his speech after the signing, he actually said that they may have not achieved all what the APC had been fighting for. But he says what we have achieved is a very good step to move forward. He says Rome was not built in a day, but we should not give up because they are our friends, they are our brothers, and they would have differences. But whether we live or die, Sierra Leone will continue.
Calvin, thank you so much again for this very important update. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, James.
That was reporter Calvin Lewis speaking with us from the Sierra Leone capital, Freetown. Chad's Prime Minister Salik Kazibo Wednesday accepted the resignation of the country's defense minister and the government's general secretary after two separate tips purported to show the men were shared widely on social media. According to Reuters, the videos reportedly showed the men engaging in intimate acts with other people. Clement Abai Futa is the president of the Chadian Association of Victims of Political Repression and Crime. He tells me that it's a good thing that the ministers resigned because talking publicly about sex is a taboo in Chadian society.
The reaction is, throughout a shame act, because we cannot realize that our authority can do such a thing, a shame. You know, people are not to believe such a thing. So it is a really deception for us.
You said it is a shame. Is it because he is a government official or this has to do with culture?
No, it's not a culture. You know, here we cannot, you're not used to talk about such a thing because there are authorities and it's showing that they used to do that. So, you know, it's a reveal that they used to do that. It's not our custom. You know, here, about sex act, we are all, our society don't talk about it. They're ashamed for the society, they're ashamed for the family.
The Prime Minister has accepted the resignation. Does this mean that the Prime Minister believe the tapes?
I think If the Prime Minister did not accept this decision to leave the government, I think that there will be a problem, because now people are not ready to accept it. But, you know, we have challenges according to education, according to health. We have many problems. No, we cannot focus on certain bring the people or our, mind down. Very, very down act. So we cannot accept that. The Prime Minister acted. If he didn't, he doesn't do it, I think that people will move.
Did the people in chat, did they see the tapes or the videos, or this is just rumor?
Yes, all throughout the people is, and they talk about the video. People talk a lot about this ashamed video. So I think that it's not good for the image or our people or our society, or let's say that our country. So I think that it's good for them to leave the government.
Clement, thank you so much. It's always good to talk with you.
Thank you.
Clement Abaifuta is the president of the Association of Victims of Former Chadian President Hissène Habré's Crimes. He was speaking with us from the Chadian capital, N'Djamena. Malawi has begun moving female inmates from prison facilities they share with male prisoners. Authorities say the transfer to female-only prisons is intended to place the women in an environment more conducive to their well-being. Lamek Masina reports from the commercial capital, Blantyre.
The more than 20 prisons in Malawi are categorized as maximum security and medium security, offering various correctional programs for inmates. Authorities, however, say those facilities were not built with women in mind. Chimwemwe Shawa is a spokesperson for the Malawi Prison Service.
Correctional programs like formal and informal education and vocational training and others, we are biased towards men because of the structural designs of the prisons, which are gender insensitive, as they made it impossible to mix female and male prisoners so that they can equally benefit from the programs.
Shawa says the workshops are very close to male cells, where women prisoners do not dare to go for fear of being bullied or verbally harassed. Shawa also says the general prisons do not provide a conducive environment for women for their education. As a result, only male inmates advance their prison educations. Malawi in 2020 temporarily put female prisoners in isolated jails to slow the COVID-19 pandemic and prevent incoming prisoners from infecting the women and their babies.
Because of that, some of them express interest to start pursuing formal education. And it is from that one of them managed to do well. Now you do see that it was more like a coincidence, but the results were so positive. That's why I was saying, what if we design programs for them and that we give them, a conducive environment?
Shawa says of 412 female prisoners in Malawi, 59 have so far relocated to an all-female prison known as Kachere, formerly used as a rehabilitation center for juveniles in central Malawi.
It means all the school blocks will be used by female prisoners, and that we have already started sending competent teachers who are officers to make sure that they provide quality education to these female prisoners.
Victor Mhango is executive director for the Non-Governmental Center for Human Rights Education, Advice and Assistance, which advocates for the welfare of prisoners. He welcomes the relocation of the female prisoners, but fear that the move will end some of the family visits.
Many prisoners are taken to the prison closest to their area. But in this case, it will be like a prisoner from Chikipa is being kept in Mzuzu. It means that the relatives, it will be difficult for them to go and see her. I think that would be a challenge. But otherwise, the idea is good.
National Prisons spokesperson Shawa acknowledges the concerns, saying currently only 3 facilities have been selected for the all-female prisons. He says plans are underway to have as many female prisons, which would help reduce distances for family visits. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
And that's it for this Thursday, October 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botting, Washington, saying have a great day and please be safe whatever you do.